the morning, Cornerstone Christian Schools versus University Interscholastic League. Okay, you're Mr. Powerstein, is that it?
May it please the court, J.D. Powerstein from San Antonio, Texas, for Cornerstone Christian Schools. Your Honors, we're here appealing from the district court's granting of a motion to dismiss and its conversion of a Rule 12b-6 motion in part into a summary judgment motion, and it's then granting of summary judgment. At issue in this case are two related but distinct fundamental rights, one being the parents' fundamental right to educate their children in private schools, recognized in Norwood against Harrison and Pierce against the Society of Sisters, and the related right of parents to guide the religious future and education of their children. The Farharts, the family that we represent here today, along with Cornerstone Schools, have elected to send their children to a private, religion-centered school, which they believe, according to our allegations, is a central part of their religious education of their children.
But what I don't understand why this is a free exercise claim. I really don't. Why isn't this a private versus public education school system? I don't know. I don't understand why you are trying to focus on the religious aspect of this school. We have schools in New Orleans that are private and not religious. They're just private. I understand you're
Correct.
Saying the private schools are Jesuit and this school, that they are religious. But I don't understand why the religious component is controlling in your...
Your Honor, I don't know that the religious component is controlling. As I said, we're concerned with two rights, one being the right to educate in private schools. And really the key in this case, in my mind, is the burdening of the parents' exercise of those rights.
How are they burdened?
They're burdened.
What rights of religion are being burdened here?
In our judgment, Your Honor, what's burdened is that when you make the choice to send your child to a private religious-centered school, you're denied access to this wonderful, unique interscholastic organization that the state of Texas has created as a consequence of exercising the right to send your kids to a private school or a religious center.
But that's not correct because the two Jesuit schools are members.
That's correct, Your Honor, but everyone else is excluded. The way that is a unique situation, the Jesuit schools sued the UIL. This court had granted oral argument, and while that was pending, a settlement was reached that allowed those two schools to join the UIL.
Well, your client could have joined. You could make application. The problem is that under the rules, you had what you might call a disability. It was a little unclear which disability you had, but you had a disability. Either you were entitled to be a member of TAPS, or you weren't because you didn't play by the rules of TAPS and they drummed you out of the Corps. But you did have a choice. You could have applied. You just didn't comply with the rules.
Well, we have sought to apply, Your Honor. We've been told that we can't join, as I recall, or that they wouldn't accept our application.
TAPS, you mean?
I believe that's also true of the UIL, Your Honor. I think there's a letter in the record in which they've declined to allow us to participate in the
right,
UIL.
Right, because they say you don't comply with the rules. But, it isn't the case that a private religious-centered school can't. You do have an ability to go to them and say, we want to be a part of your league as opposed to this other league, and they have a set of rules that say you don't fit.
You know, and I believe that under a fully developed record, we would be able to show that those rules are designed to permit two schools, the two that are members of the UIL, to apply. I believe, at least at the time the rule was adopted, and I can't make that representation as today, that no other private schools in the state are big enough to apply for Class 5A membership. So effectively, we cannot apply to join the UIL under that rule.
Well, let me ask you a couple of questions that are related to what the arguments that you're making and on the other hand didn't make on appeal. This question of the standing of Cornerstone Christian Schools to assert this free exercise clause issue, you don't make the same argument about the threshold to be able to make that claim with respect to your due process claim. You don't argue that on appeal, nor does the other side. Nobody talks about whether there's any heightened requirement with respect to standing, with respect to the free exercise, to the due process claim, and the other claims here. Is it the same standard? The district court held there had to be some element of coercion as a result of which only the parents or the child himself can make this claim, the First Amendment claim. And no one has addressed whether that same standard applies with respect to the due process clause claim and the other claim, which I forget now what it is. But
as it relates to the school.
Equal protection.
Candidly, Your Honor, I don't believe I can answer that question right
okay.
now. I have not taken a look at that precise issue.
Another question that I have, which I have to say I'm sort of mystified by, the district court went ahead and granted this summary judgment. Everybody seems to have sort of gone along with that on the issue of how it is that you got drummed out of the core or couldn't apply here. But I didn't understand that you were that the issue was even raised as to whether that had been proper or not in the complaint. So,
the issue of the conversion to a Rule 56 motion, Your Honor?
Yeah, I mean the complaint doesn't. Yeah, I mean why is it that the district court went ahead and made all this summary judgment type finding, and on whether they could or couldn't exclude you from the UIL, and I didn't even understand that was raised by the complaint. So why is it that he went ahead and did it? I might say if I'd been in his shoes, I might have done it too, just because it sort of gives a flavor to the case, you might say, but that helps him, the district judge. But I didn't understand that it was raised by the complaint.
Your Honor, I believe that the UIL raised those issues in response to the complaint in the dismissal and the summary judgment briefing.
Well, was there a cross-claim then, or?
No, Your Honor, but I think those issues were raised as a justification for why we were not being permitted to join the UIL and why we are raising the sorts of arguments that we're raising. I don't believe it is necessarily germane to the allegations we made in the complaint, though.
Okay.
Your complaint was on constitutional issues, and that's
yeah.
what the motion to dismiss was granted on.
That's correct.
And then there was this aberration, this summary judgment issue, which was an as-applied challenge,
right.
which was not something you were even claiming.
Now, that's
so
correct,
I don't,
Your Honor.
I don't know why, well, I guess we're saying the same thing, I don't
yeah.
know why that was ruled
that's
on,
true.
And I don't think we need to be concerned with it if it's not part of your pleadings. Okay.
And we've taken up some of your time.
Oh, no, that's
proceed.
Certainly fine, Your Honor. You know, essentially, again, Your Honor, we view the core of this case as being the argument on the unconstitutional conditioning and the fact that the state has created this wonderful thing in the UIL, but will not allow private and private religious schools to join and participate in the interscholastic competitions. And as I look at Perry against Sinderman and Harris against McRae and the other cases, they all seem to home in on the idea that having created a benefit, the state cannot condition its availability on the forswearing of a constitutionally protected interest. And in effect, because you have to send your children to a public school in order to get access to the UIL, and we are one of three out of 50 states that require that in Texas, parents are being forced to make that choice. If you want your children to have access to the UIL, state created and funded, then you have to forego private school education and send your children to a public school.
Well, what I don't understand is how you if you make that argument, how you deal with the fact that when you make a choice to send your child to a religious school, you necessarily almost always have to give up some of the features of public schools that then are not available to you. You can't pick and choose. I mean, I went to a Catholic school, and it was a good school, but frankly not the best. And I might have been better off in the public school that was just down the way that Chief Justice Rehnquist went to, I might add. That may be the reason why he succeeded so splendidly and got a much better education in science than I got. But could my parents have come in under your theory and said, okay, well, she gets to go over here and take these science courses because it's a much better school from that standpoint than the one we're in? Why is that not a perfectly reasonable extension of the argument you're making?
Your Honor, I believe there's a fundamental difference in that the science classes to which the court refers are an integral part of the school education, but the UIL sits on top of the schools and coordinates its interscholastic programs. So it's, to me, not part and parcel of the public school education in the way a science class is, and I'm aware there are cases that have held that homeschooled students can't force the schools to let them attend part-time and that sort of thing.
But didn't you make the educational choice? As I understand, the UIL is part of the UT educational system. It's kind of a private corporation type thing. That's at the same time it's a state arm, but it's considered athletics is a form of the education that exists. It's a part of the education program that exists in the state schools. All right. Now, when someone chooses to go to, and I went to a Catholic school also, but if when my parents chose to put me in a Catholic school and I went to that school, I chose the educational system of that school. I don't know how I can choose the educational system of that school, including the religion that comes with it and the way they teach history and who their teachers are and whether they have tenure or not and all that educational component, and say, well, I have chosen this educational system, but I want from this other educational system a component that exists over there. That's why my initial question is, I don't know how this is a free exercise. It seems like you're choosing a form of education and everything that comes with it, but you also want now to have a component of another educational system that you gave up in order to come over here.
Your Honor, I think that I would say to that I would regard the UIL as distinct from the school, and you having made the choice to attend a Catholic school should not be denied access to this separate interscholastic league that the state has created and funded any more than you should be denied, in a perhaps an absurd example, the right to drive on the public highways to get to your Catholic school.
But you wouldn't be excluded. It's not a religious versus public school. You said it was the size. You said your school was too small. The size of the school is one of the controlling rules. Well, why isn't, I mean, that's not an equal protection violation. There's a rational basis for dividing schools by size.
Well, I think, Your Honor, though, what we have is the conditioning, in my mind, of the requiring you to forego the private school right in order to get into the UIL. And again, I believe that.
But you have to look at the Jesuit component. You said, well, you can't compare Jesuit to your school because they're big.
Yeah.
Well, big is part of the component, part of the rules for UIL.
Yep. Your Honor.
Size. And those.
I don't regard, Your Honor, the fact that two large schools were, after applying judicial coercion or legal coercion, able to join the UIL under rules that I believe exclude all other private schools to end the analysis.
What are the rules that exclude all other private schools?
I believe, Your Honor, that the size requirements that were engrafted when
because
they settled with the Jesuits.
Size. You're trying to have the same kind of teams compete against one another.
Yes,
it's
Your
like
Honor.
The jury. The more jurors you have, the better shot you're getting at a solid verdict. The bigger school, the bigger pool of good athletes, just because you have more people to choose from.
Well, Well, Your Honor, there are...
Why is that on a rational basis?
There are size gradations in the Class 5A, 4A, 3A, et cetera. And, you know, it seems to me, Your Honor, that... Well, I had a point I was going to make, and it slipped my mind.
That only happens...
Walsh and the other cases, you know, seem to say to me that you apply strict scrutiny to this kind of an issue, and you need a compelling state interest. And we believe that the district court erroneously applied the law and that the ruling below should be reversed. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. Well, if I may, I'd like to say a few words about standing and then talk about this parental choice, free exercise argument. And I'd like to separate that from this, what I agree is a side issue that the district court got off onto, which is whether they should be eligible under the special exception that was made under which two private schools have come into UIL. On standing, until a few days ago, I would have said the standing issue disposes of Cornerstone's case, but it doesn't dispose of the private plaintiff's case, so let's go ahead to the merits. The what has emerged, and I'll admit the court was more diligent in watching the calendar than the parties have been, but what we now have is a situation where the named plaintiff student will graduate in May. We don't have, the plaintiff did not identify any interscholastic activity that this particular student wants to participate in between now and May graduation. Obviously, football season is over. If the court were to give us its decision today, it's not clear how we'd benefit. And, of course, under Lujan versus Defenders of Wildlife, the third element for individual standing is that the injury would be remedied by a favorable decision.
You're saying that after May it becomes moot, and it may be moot now?
Right. Mm-hmm. And
that's why the question was asked in the way in which it was.
Right.
It wasn't just asked in terms of his age or
right.
when he was going to graduate, but also whether he would benefit from any of the programs.
I would point out the plaintiffs did not seek a preliminary injunction when they brought this suit, which would have been a way of avoiding the... We all know that students are going to graduate at some point.
And the only alleged one in the pleading is playing football?
Well, I think they said somewhere in the record they talked about how this particular plaintiff is in speech activities and
well, that's part of UIL.
Right, it is. That was... right. And so conceivably, I think there is a spring UIL speech competition.
Yeah.
But they didn't say in response to the court's question that's what he wants. Well, let's assume that is. So that gets you the individual, so we can go to the merits. But Cornerstone, when you're talking about a free exercise claim, and I don't see how Cornerstone could have standing to represent the parents' right, but it would be necessary to litigate the individual claims, which is the third element of associational standing. Because although the school may offer football for religious reasons, and that doesn't tell you why the student enrolled. The school may offer it for religious reasons, but people have different reasons for participating in sports. Now, we all know that in Texas there are people for whom football is a religion. Then there are other people who go into football just because they want to play football, same with speech or anything else. So in order to determine what kind of burden this has on anybody's religion, we would have to know something about the individual, so it would be necessary to litigate them. So I think Cornerstone's got a real standing problem. But let's, on the assumption that somebody in this case has standing, I'd like to look at the merits. I was surprised to hear a moment ago, if I heard correctly, that the religious component now isn't all that important. It's totally the parents' right to send their children to private school. I think it does depend on the free exercise clause, but I'll get back to that. Just looking at, okay, the parents, according to Supreme Court decisions and this court, a parent has a fundamental right to control a child's education. However, as this court said in Kite versus Marshall and Walsh versus Louisiana Athletic Association, Basically, that's a right that's fundamental in depth, but pretty narrow in scope. The parents, it basically creates a duty of the state not to forbid the parent from exercising the choice, but there's no duty to make that choice easier. And to go back to Judge King's question earlier, any provision the state makes, whether it's at the school district level or at the state level, for public education is going to have an impact on a parent's choice. Take transportation. The state of Texas authorizes through the education code and funds a system whereby in each school district there's a bus that'll pick your child up and take you to public school. Some private schools offer transportation, some don't. If a parent wants to enroll a child in a private school that doesn't offer transportation and it's two working parents, that could make a big difference in that choice. But does that mean now that we're going to create an obligation for the public school system to include private school children on the bus if their private school doesn't offer transportation? That obviously has huge implications. The curriculum was mentioned. The state mandates a curriculum, and conceivably some private school may not offer all the courses, and they don't have to. Teachers in the public school system get retirement and health benefits through the teacher retirement system. Private school teachers aren't eligible for that system. That could make a big difference in the quality of instruction that's available. That's why I think courts have been careful to say that the state simply has to refrain from directly forbidding the parents to exercise their choice. It doesn't mean that it cannot make provisions for the public schools that you have to be in public school to get. The free exercise clause was certainly pled by the plaintiffs, and it was certainly argued by the plaintiffs to the trial court, and I thought was argued in their brief here, so I want to speak to it on the assumption it hasn't been abandoned. Judge Beery quoted at length from Employment Division versus Smith, the Supreme Court decision. Now, as it turns out, that decision was reaffirmed through the City of Burney case versus Flores, which, of course, came out of the same San Antonio division of the Western District. And so it is still very good law. And the key passage from Smith, which City of Burney reinforced and reemphasized, is that when you have an incidental burden that's imposed by a law of general application, you don't have an interference with the free exercise of religion. And I think that this is just the epitome of an incidental burden. There is nothing in this rule says you have to give up your religion to join UIL. It just says you have to go to public school. And, of course, the public schools are open to anybody regardless of religion. They can't constitutionally, under the Establishment Clause and the Free Exercise Clause, the public schools can't.
That argument assumes that incidental burden, i.e. competing in the UIL structure in Texas, is a burden on religion. And
the burden is on private school. It's on private school education if there is a burden. The burden on religion is very remote. I thought that they were trying
to apply to private, whether it's a Christian school or a non-Christian school or just a private school.
Right. I guess I'm being more generous to the plaintiff's argument than Your Honor. They made the statement in their pleadings, and that's why I thought this came prepared for this to be an issue, that at Cornerstone, athletics are offered as part of its religious mission. So I suppose that's the way they're trying to get there. But no, the exclusion by the University Interscholastic League is of private schools regardless. And when they made this narrow exception a few years ago, as it turns out, the two schools that have qualified for that exception are religious. So it's obvious.
How can it be part of its religious mission unless everyone is required to play football as part of its religion.
I can't say, I mean, my answer would be it can't be. It can't be, and especially it's hard to see the religious aspect of it anyway, but if the point is that the school's going to use athletics as a way of teaching religion, maybe the Beatitudes, maybe this morning, blessed are the poor in spirit, for they shall be comforted, would go well in Phoenix, but otherwise, whatever, however they use it, but you can say that about any aspect of life. You know, presumably a religious school, and that's why parents send their children, maybe that's why two of you had Catholic educations, is they felt, your parents felt like, well, this school will teach you a religious lesson on everything, every part of life. That would really open the floodgates and create an obligation on the part of the state to make available to private school parents and private school students anything that's made available to public school students. And certainly neither the Supreme Court nor this court has ever gone that far. And in the University Interscholastic, when the Texas Interscholastic League came up before this court in Kite versus Marshall and Niles, and when the Louisiana counterpart came up before this court in Walsh, the court said, yes, there's a parental choice, but it cannot fit. One of the things the U.S. Supreme Court has said, your assertion of a religious belief can't fix the terms of your relationship with government. So you can't say paying taxes is against my religion, so I'll just decline this year. Might make some cabinet confirmations easier if you could say that, but you can't. And same here, there's a rule of general applicability and it only imposes an incidental burden.
Is this court's decision in Navarez still good? I mean, we rejected that there's any protected interest in the separate components of the educational process, such right. as participation in interscholastic athletics. Why doesn't that control?
I think that it does. I think the interscholastic decisions of this court all, the only way the plaintiffs can get to where they want to go is either reverse or find some very far-reaching way of distinguishing all the court's interscholastic decisions. And yes, it's good law that there is no constitutional right to extracurricular activities per se. Looks like I'm going to be able to stop.
Let me ask you one
sure.
question. The question that I ask opposing counsel.
Right.
The plaintiff's due process and equal protection claims, do they require an individualized showing? Nobody's briefed that.
The equal protection for sure, because what Cornerstone hasn't done is allege some sort of equal protection claim vis-a-vis Jesuit and Strake. So the only then classification they can be talking about is between students in private school and students in public school. And so that would require an individualized determination. The equal protection claim is disposed of by the free exercise and parental choice, because those are the only fundamental rights they've identified. And without a fundamental right, it's rational basis, minimum scrutiny. The plaintiffs here haven't even tried to make a case on rational basis. They've said that, citing the Sherbert versus Verner decision, the Supreme Court, which was actually overruled in Employment Division versus Smith, and that overruling then was restored in City of Burney, they tried to say, well, no, you look at their equal protection claim under strict scrutiny, but they don't get strict scrutiny until they've shown the fundamental right. If they show the fundamental right...
Well, I was really more inquiring more about standing.
Standing?
Yeah.
With respect to Cornerstone.
Right. Cornerstone, it would require a look. It would vary from school to school, but it really, they're bringing, in effect, a vicarious claim on behalf of their students, and I think it would, they don't have standing to assert the equal protection right. Not all of their members, to use association language, are even going to compete in athletics, and then as I mentioned earlier, not all of them are, or any other interscholastic event, and not all of them will compete for religious or reasons or for as an exercise of parents' rights to guide education. The due process claim, I thought they said substantive due process. Well, substantive due process, it means three different things, two of which don't apply in this case. There's the substantive due process claim where life or liberty is deprived by arbitrary and capricious conduct. They haven't pled that, and you've got here the application of a rule of general applicability. It's pursuant to a rule, so it's not arbitrary and capricious. There's the substantive due process claim when for deprivation of life, liberty, or property by conduct that shocks the judicial conscience. They haven't pled that. Otherwise, substantive due process is just the vehicle by which specific rights in the Bill of Rights are binding on the states through the 14th Amendment. So I don't see how the substantive due process claim is really just redundant of their free exercise and parental right to control children's education. That's why I say it's the free exercise, how you decide, if you get to the merits, how the court decides the free exercise and the parental choice question disposes of the rest of the case. The last thing I'll say is just to get this whole issue out of the way about the eligibility to join UIL under this special rule. That is a question of an agency's interpretation of its own rule. Both federal law and state law say that you give great deference to the agency's interpretation of its own rule, only if it contradicts the statute that authorized the agency to make the rule or if it's wholly irrational. And there would be a jurisdictional. One reason we didn't raise it and they didn't raise it, in Pennhurst, the Supreme Court said a federal court cannot decide a pure state law question against state officials. So and anyway, it's immaterial because if it's unconstitutional to keep private schools out of UIL, it doesn't matter whether this exception was applied or not. If it's not unconstitutional, then like I say, you've got a pure question of state law that a federal judge has no business deciding with respect to state officials. So it probably, as was mentioned earlier, helped Judge Beery put this case into context. He found some irony in the claim, but I don't think when we get right down to it that it really is material. So this case turns on standing and on these First Amendment rights that have been asserted, and I think that for those reasons, the decision below should be affirmed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Powerstein.
May it please the court, I'd like to touch briefly on the status of Mr. Farhart and the question of mootness. On the record, we alleged that he participated in band, the science fair, and math competition or math activities at Cornerstone. The record does not indicate one way or the other as to whether he could benefit in those areas from a ruling in this case. The mootness cases that I've looked at on student issues have all held that once they've graduated, the case has become moot, but he has not yet graduated.
Have to get this case wrapped up by early May.
I think so, Your Honor. There are some mentions in some of the cases to the, quote, impending graduation of a student, but those all seem to turn on the DeFunis against Overgaard case. And if one reads that case, the reasoning of the Supreme Court there turned on the fact that the law student in question had been admitted, was in his last quarter, and unquestionably was going to be allowed to graduate, so that he had received all the relief he could possibly receive. And so it's not his status as an impending graduate, but the status of the relief that controlled there. Further to Judge Clement's questioning, my opponent admitted that the rule excludes all private schools, subject to a narrow exception in his argument. And again, we believe that it's this exclusion, this burdening of the right, denying the benefit when one chooses private education, that is the crux of this case. Fundamental rights of two sorts are at issue here, and clearly, by its rules, the UIL denies those who exercise the right to seek a private religious education the opportunity to participate in its programs. You know, that you can't do that when by firing a teacher at a public school who sends her kid to private school. You presumably could not deny a job applicant whose child went to private school employment in a public school district solely for that reason. And similarly here, the UIL is denying participation in its leagues solely because these folks send their children to private schools, and in this case, private religious school. And so we believe that they are conditioning the access to this wonderful state-created and funded right upon foregoing protected interests and sending your children to a public school. And we don't believe that the law permits that. We would ask that the judgment below be reversed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The court will take